help the MPs introducing themselves. Can we start with you, please, sir?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Tony Duba, the Chairperson of Economic Development and Environmental Affairs in the Eastern Cape Province.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Aaron Magman. I'm the Chairperson for Economic Development and Agriculture in the province of Gauteng.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Willem Faber. I'm a member of the committee, on select committee here in Parliament, and I represent the largest province, which is the Northern Cape province, with the fastest fibre connections on our west coast.
Good morning, everybody. Chairperson, my name is Okita Blanche, and I'm also now a permanent member here, and I'm representing the Western Cape. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Mahume Masike. I'm the Chairperson of Economic Development, Finance, and the Premier's Office from the Northwest.
Good morning, Chairperson, and everybody. My name is Masfago Dekhale. I represent Limpopo Province.
Thank you very much. That's our members, and I'm Eddie Makua. I'm representing the province of Gauteng. That's our secretary, Lupeka Mtideni, that's sitting next to me. Can we then go around so that we follow a sequence? Oh, sorry, Honorable Eastern Cape.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Malta Khai, a member of this committee representing the province of the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Marette Besson. I'm the PLO for the Free State Legislature.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Khata Tsunki. I'm from Free State Legislature.
Morning. My name is Malfana Lukhobo from Free State Legislature.
Morning, Chairperson, honourable members and colleagues. My name is Pavallo Oliphant. I'm the researcher from the Free State Legislature.
Morning, honourable Chairperson and members. My name is Thembani Mbadlanyana. I'm the acting content advisor for the portfolio committee, for the select committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Mr. Rashid of Parliament.
Good morning, Honourable Chairman, ladies and honourable members. My name is General Smith, and I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group, and I've got three trainees with me today.
Is your name General or the title?
Jen, J-E-N-N.
Can we get your colleagues from PGM to also introduce yourself?
Good morning, members. My name is Dom Zato Simakani, and I'm one of the trainees.
Good morning, members. My name is Takuzwa, and I'm one of the trainees. That is Takuzwa Maziria.
Good morning, members. My name is Michael Bailey, and I'm also one of the trainees.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Jean Po, and I'm representing Whiteman's attorneys based here in Cape Town.
Good morning, members, and everyone else. My name is Adira Bodasing from Polarity Consulting.
Good morning, colleagues and members of Parliament. My name is Roj Nairu, PLO.
Before we come to you, let's just take the people that
Good morning, everyone. My name is Siano Pali. I, too, am from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, colleagues. My name is Agnes Mohaihai, Comitia Administrator from Northwest Legislature.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Bonola Shipping from the Northwest Provincial Legislature as the Research of the Economy and Enterprise Development.
Thank you very much. Let's start with you then. Continue. Or do you want us to start that then? Let's start that end.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Nkwasi Mashamaite. I'm from the Department of Trade and Industry, Director General Law and Policy.
Good morning, everyone.
I'm also from the Department of Trade and Industry. I'm Zoto Matiwane, responsible for legislative drafting.
Good morning, I'm Kavishka Merkabat, the Chief Financial Officer from the National Gambling Board.
Good morning, colleagues and members of Parliament. My name is Rhea Nonyana Mokabani. I'm from the DTI. I'm Chief Director, Legislative Drafting.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Caroline Kongwa. I'm currently heading the National Gambling Board in the capacity as administrator.
Morning, honourable members and chairperson and colleagues. My name is Dr. Evelyn Masoja from the DTI DDG CCRD, Consumer and Corporate Regulation Division.
Thank you very much to the members. Warm welcome for our first meeting for the year. Our colleagues from the provincial legislatures as well. We trust that the challenges of 2019 would be met by us in our legislative functions. We wish you a blessed and prosperous 2019 to all of us. To the trainees from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group, we are, as I've just said to someone as we walk in here, very impressed by the work that the PMG is doing in terms of keeping our public informed of what's happening in Parliament. We're trying our best to ensure, particularly when we work with legislation, that our public is fully informed and have the opportunity, enjoy the right, that we grant them the right as members of Parliament to input into the legislation. We therefore appreciate even much more your presence here today. To our colleagues from the DTI, we look forward to the presentation that you're going to make. It is a Section 76 legislation. It is a very important piece of legislation. I particularly want to thank the people from the National Gambling Board that you have made the time as well to be with us today. We want to make sure that we do consult properly on this legislation. This is the first time that we are sitting for this year, as I've said, and it's quite exciting that we kick off with the amendments to the gambling bill. Let's just deal with our protocol in the committee. I'll ask our secretary to just register any apologies that we have, and then I'll table the agenda to us. Rebecca.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have received two apologies in writing. The first one is for Mr. Honorable Mutebe, who's busy with the exam. And the second one is for Honorable Matevula, who's busy with the party work.
Thank you very much. The Honorable Faber has raised with me the fact that another one of our members, the Honourable Busi Mokwebo, is having very, very deep bereavement within the family. He's lost his dad about 3 weeks ago. And you know how these things work when you're in love for a very long time. When you lose your loved one, it really affects you. So his mother is now affected as well. And I'm raising it not only as an apology, but also requesting that we hold Busi and his family in our prayers. His mother is seriously ill. We know that he's always in the committee meeting, so we understand his absence. We have been joined late by a number of people. Sorry that we started the meeting without you. I will just allow the one person to introduce himself. Hanif.
Good morning. My name is Abdullah Hanif. I'm the research for the committee.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I want to put before you the following agenda that we have done the welcoming, the apologies. We'll have the presentation from the DTI. We will then give an opportunity for the members to engage with that presentation, mindful of the fact that this is the introduction. It's going to be a long process. We have to go and consult with our provinces. So if there's technical things, we can raise it. I noticed that some of the provincial legislatures has already sent their researchers, their content advisors, and their legal teams to this meeting so that they can do the work. But we don't need to worry. When we have the hearings in the provinces, DTI will again, Dr. Masoja will allocate people from that division to assist us with the work in our provinces. So we receive it for more like the technical things that we need to clear. That's a presentation from them. Remember, we're on the agenda. And then what we're going to do, Shlupeka has prepared for us what we requested yesterday, the combined program of the two select committees. I'll speak more on it when we get there. And then finally, we have the minutes of our last meeting that I would just want us to consider in this meeting as well. In terms of the documentation, that's the agenda. In terms of the documentation, we have this briefing document called Briefing to the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations, National Gambling Amendment Bill 2018. I trust that all members have a copy of that. There will be the overhead presentation that will be done. We also have before us the actual amendments to the bill in a hard copy form. I trust that all the members have that as well. We immediately then give over to Dr. Masoja and the team to lead us.
Good morning once again, honorable members. I'm with the administrator, Ms. Caroline Gongwa, and the team as introduced. We are here to brief the Select Committee on the National Gambling Amendment Bill. So how this presentation will proceed is as per the content of the presentation. We will outline the background of the processes and also the timeline of how the processes were undertaken, and then go into the technicalities of the amendments, looking at the major key themes of the bill, and that's how the presentation will proceed. And as part of the background, we thought to indicate the historical context of where our legislation is coming from. In 1995, we had the Wuhan Commission that recommended that gambling must be strictly regulated in South Africa. And following that, we had the Gambling Act, National Gambling Act in 1996, that was passed, which was introducing the National Gambling Board. And following that, in 2004, we had the National Gambling Act amended, the 1996 Act was amended, that introduced an amendment of the National Gambling Policy Council. And the council, the intent of the council was to ensure alignment of gambling in national and provincial government, as gambling is a concurrent jurisdiction between national and provinces. So there was a need to ensure that there's a platform that ensures that uniformity and harmonization. And in 2008, there was a National Gambling Amendment Act that was passed into law to regulate interactive gambling, and it is not promulgated. There was a policy position that affected it, but it is an act of law. And in 2010, there was a need to review the whole gambling environment in South Africa. And the Gambling Review Commission was put in place, and it came up with a report that made recommendations around the policy reforms on gambling. And it addressed issues of the socioeconomic impact of gambling, the harmful effects of gambling, looking at different modes of gambling, and the future direction that the country could take as far as gambling is concerned. So this slide is mainly to indicate the context of where gambling is coming from in our republic. And currently where we are looking at the National Gambling Amendment Bill 2018, which was introduced into Parliament last year after the extensive consultation with the public and other stakeholders. And the Wuhan Commission is very important because it has set some key principles that informs the national gambling policy to date. I won't go through them in detail, but just to highlight a few, for example, the protection of society from the overstimulation of gambling through the limitation of gambling opportunities was one of the principles. Another principle was the protection of players and the integrity and fairness of the industry through strict control and supervision of the industry. Uniformity and harmonization, which is one of the key issues that is of importance even in this current bill. And also issues of the economy around the generation of revenue and taxes for provincial governments and for good causes. So it is a founding document, a founding process that led to these principles that are still governing how we look at gambling to date. I'm going to now move to the processes of the bill itself in terms of the timeline. Where we started was in 15 May of 2015, the DTI published the National Gambling Policy for broader public consultation, and there were consultative processes that were followed for a particular period, and the National Gambling Policy was approved by Cabinet on the 17th of February 2016, and the National Gambling Amendment Bill was drafted pursuant to that approval. And in 30 September of 2016, the National Gambling Amendment Bill was published for broader public consultation, and this consultation was for 45 days, and there were engagements with stakeholders that lasted until the early part of 2017, and the bill was submitted to the Chief State Law Advisor for certification, and the certification was finalized last year, May 2018, and following that, the DTI published the intention, the notice of intention to introduce the bill to Parliament, and which was gazetted on the 20th of July of 2018, and it was introduced to Parliament on the 21st of August 2018, and there was a briefing of the Portfolio Committee on the bill in September of 2018 on the 12th. And on the 19th of September, the committee called for written submission with the closing date, which was on the 12th of October. And the bill, as it came, it had many issues that we prioritized policy consideration, but it had to be, given the issues of time and other considerations, it had to be reduced in terms of scope. And in terms of the rules of Parliament, the committee has the right to approve, reject, amend, or redraft any legislation before it. So therefore, certain amendments were prioritized. And on the 16th of October, the committee resolved, the Democratic Alliance dissented, to only consider provisions related to certain key sections of the legislation. They will be discussed in full in terms of the presentation. One of them is to reform the National Gambling Board to a regulator to look at the issues concerning the National Gambling Policy Council, which is a structure that was formed to look at concurrent issues of gambling, and then the regulation around the National Central Electronic Monitoring System, and some of the minor amendments as well. So these are the key areas that were reprioritized when the bill was considered further by the committee. And there were public hearings that took place in October of 2018 for 2 days, from the 24th and 26th, yes. And also there were deliberations that took place regarding the bill in the Portfolio Committee. And finally, the National Assembly considered the Portfolio Committee report, and the second reading of the bill was on the 5th of December of 2018, and the National Assembly adopted the bill on the 5th of December 2018. In terms of what are the key thrusts of this bill, the rationale of the bill is as follows. The bill aims to provide for the reconfiguration of the National Gambling Board, which will become the National Gambling Regulator, led by the CEO without a board structure. Also to provide for the automatic forfeiture of unlawful winnings to the National Gambling Regulator, to provide for the quorum of the National Gambling Policy Council to make a final decision in the second meeting with the majority of the members present in that meeting, to extend the National Central Electronic Monitoring System to other modes of gambling, and to enhance the powers of the National Inspectorate to curb illegal gambling activities. I will go into further details in the next slide, just to indicate some of those major amendments, and to amend and delete certain definitions, and to provide for the transitional arrangements as well. In terms of the minor amendments in the bill, some of them are going to be a bit more technical, but I'll just go through them. Clause 3 inserts Section 10A, which empowers the National Gambling Regulator to keep a register of unlawful gambling operators, and also that the said operators will be disqualified for 5 years from applying for a license to operate. We do have unlawful gambling activities and unlawful gambling operators. And to discourage those activities, there is a proposal to have a register of these unlawful operators, where their information will be publicized and they will not be allowed to participate in gambling activities for a particular period. And I think that is something that we hope it will be received because of the consequences of harmful gambling activities and illegal gambling operations in the country overall. And clause 4 inserts amendment of section 14 by inserting subsection 13, which require operators to remove excluded persons from their mailing list. Excluded persons are persons who are excluded from gambling activities. We call them problem gamblers. These are people with problem gambling, the issues of problem gambling. They are excluded, exclude themselves, or they can be excluded through others, through the courts and so on. And it is discouraged that these individuals should receive mailing lists where the adverts are sent to them of gambling activities. So this is to issue or to provide further protection for the excluded persons. Clause 5 amends Section 16, Subsection 4 to provide that unlawful winnings be forfeited to the National Gambling Regulator subject to compliance with PAJA, and the winnings will no longer be forfeited to the state after the High Court order, as the provision requires in the current Act. It strengthens the conditions to verify the unlawful winnings. Currently, this process requires the High Court, and sometimes the cost of going to court is more expensive because the amount that is being pursued, you find that it's a smaller amount, but then the process of the court is more expensive. So this aims to simplify the processes and also to ensure that those unlawful winnings, they are forfeited to the NGR instead of the state. And with this proposal, the aim is to ensure that those funds will assist with enforcement capacity to combat issues of illegal gambling activities and so on. So these are the proposals around the unlawful winnings and the role of the NGR and how the simplifying of the processes from the courts to the other processes of the PAJA will address the unlawful forfeiture of unlawful winnings. And another major amendment here is the National Central Electronic Monitoring System, called the NSEM. Clause 12 amends Section 27 to provide that the National Central Electronic Monitoring System will be extended to apply to casino, bingo, and betting activities under the auspices of the NGR. This will be a move away from the current system that is self-operated by operators who intend to share the data with the provincial licensing authorities. And additional subsections of this clause provide for the national license, the implementation date for the NSEMs, and give powers to the minister to determine the extent of the operation of the NSEMs. So this area currently is only limited to the limited payout machines. So we are requesting that it be extended to other modes of gambling as well. And there has been challenges experienced in terms of the monitoring of information and detecting of activities in gambling, and also which impact also on the protection of punters, who are our players. So with the NSEMs, this will bring oversight over gambling information and also keeping tab of activities of gambling in the Republic. And clause 15, amend section 33 to emphasize the role of the NGR to consider applications and motivations from provincial licensing authorities for additional limited payout machines in line with the criteria. So here we are proposing a criteria to look at the additional licenses on the limited payout machines. And it's more of a concurrency where national and the provinces will concur on the additional licenses. And it will be, the criteria will be prescribed. So this does provide for that requirement. The next major amendment is around the National Gambling Policy Council. Clause 26 inserts section 63A, which provides that in cases where there is a National Gambling Policy Council meeting and there's no quorum, the decision on issues tables will be made in the next meeting, provided it is supported by the majority of voting members present at that meeting. For the previous years, there has been challenges with the quorum of the National Gambling Policy Council meetings, where you will have MECs confirming attendance, and on the day of the meeting, they will not attend, and then it will affect the quorum. And because of that, many decisions had to be deferred, and sometimes there won't be a quorum over a long period, for even a year or so. So we think that it's a very critical issue, and there's a need for national and provinces to agree on key policy considerations. So the proposal here is that if in the first meeting there's no quorum, meaning the numbers of MECs with the combined with the minister, they don't meet the quorum requirement, in the next meeting, the majority of the members that are available in that meeting can make a decision. And there have been debates about why can't there be other considerations, like if there's no quorum, using the round-robin approach. And with experience, the round-robin approach has not worked. Even outside the policy and the bill processes, it does not work, where you find that feedback is not forthcoming and we still don't get satisfactory responses on policy consideration. So we think that this proposal will assist to ensure consistency, harmonization, and alignment and coordination on issues of gambling concurrency. So it's just to ensure that that area is addressed, and also to address the delays caused by lack of quorum, which affects the policy decisions we made and other coordination efforts of the National Gambling Policy Council. And clause 24 inserts powers of the National Gambling Policy Council to address policy and legislative amendments to ensure alignment. This one talks to the fact that there might be a national policy that prohibits a particular activity. And then because the policy council is not concurrent on certain issues, you find that two provinces have a different approach that is contrary to the national. So this is to ensure that there is coordination and engagement on different policy imperatives for the national and the provinces. It's for consistency as well and alignment. And another major proposed amendment is the National Gambling Board conversion to the National Gambling Regulator. Clause 28 amends Section 64 to provide for the establishment of the National Gambling Regulator as a public entity, which is a juristic person led by the CEO. And Clause 29 amends Section 65, Subsection 1, by inserting subparagraph 65(1)(eb) to empower the NGR to collect and retain monetary fee from all modes of gambling regarding the National Central Electronic Monetary System. So they will oversee the NSEM and also the fees that are collected and retaining those fees for the NSEM. Clause 30 inserts Section 65A and 65B, which provides that the CEO is eligible for appointment for a period of 5 years, which can be renewed for another 5 years. And the provision further provides that the CEO must be a fit and proper person who must not be disqualified, and all other requirements for their appointment. Section 65B provides for the function of the CEO to perform and outline. It also outlines responsibilities, which include responsibilities pertaining to the functions of the NGR, the appointment of staff, management of the NGR financial resources, delegation of certain functions, and the accountability to the minister. So this basically talks to the governance of the NGR, the appointment of staff, the financial resources, and other and the responsibilities of the regulator with the work they do for the, with the minister. Another key area of the amendment is around the intergovernmental relations. This is very important also because of the issues around the concurrency between the national and the provincial gambling mandates. And we clause 32 insert section 66A to empower the NGR to work collaboratively with other government departments or institutions responsible for gambling-related matters, and they may enter into working agreements with such institutions, which includes establishing forums for such purposes. We think that it's very important to encourage cooperation, coordination, and collaboration between the NGR and other institutions and provinces. So this is to empower those interactions and forums and interventions that may come up to address different elements of the gambling mandate. The powers of the National Inspectorate. Here we are strengthening the inspectorate between national and provincial, and clause 40 in section 76A to provide for additional powers of the national gambling inspectors that they may act with or without provincial inspectors to investigate illegal gambling activities. The reason why this is important is because there are currently restrictions in terms of what National Gambling Board can do in terms of investigations and inspectorate. There are serious limitations, and there's a need to empower them to go into the activities that combat illegal gambling activities. So the inspectorate capacity that is being proposed here is to strengthen the inspectorate. And we also encourage that provinces will work together with the NGR to strengthen their capacity to go into combating different illegal gambling activities. And this will include powers to serve illegal operators with a notice to stop operating pending investigation, litigation, and prosecution. So this is another power where an activity is been identified, where it can be stopped until pending processes. And once illegal gambling operations are proven, the inspectors will also advise landlords to lawfully evict the illegal operators from the premises. And also banks will be required to stop business with any proven illegal gambling operator. So we also encourage here the banks and to not pay out for illegal gambling activities. And financial institutions will be required to comply with FICA Act by not processing payments in relation to illegal gambling activities. So provisions are there to empower the inspectorate and to tighten currently where there are gaps within regarding the inspectorate. And overall in the bill, we have consequential amendments. I hope members have got copies of the presentation. If you are looking at the... Okay, I'll just continue from there. Technology has failed me now. Okay, in terms of consequential amendments, the consequential amendments are those related to the CEO, also the board. Where we have the board, the board is replaced by the National Gambling Regulator, and in other instances where CEO... So it's consequential where we have the board, now we have the regulator. In some instances where we have the CEO, we have the regulator. Those are just consequential. And the regulation, clause 42 amends section 87 subsection 1 by inserting subparagraph FA, which will empower minister to make regulations to set out the criteria the NGR will use to observe when considering applications for additional LPMs for provinces. That's where I was talking about additional licenses for limited payout machines. And for those licenses where the national will concur with the provinces, there is a criteria that the minister will prescribe. So this clause and section empowers the minister to be able to set up that criteria. It's just an empowering regulation clause. In terms of the transitional arrangements, clause 44 provides for the transitional arrangements, which provides that the employees of the NGB will be deemed to be employees of the NGR, and that immovable and movable assets, financial, administrative, and other records, contractual rights and obligations and liabilities of the board will be those of the NGR. So it's more of the transitioning from the board to the regulator, the powers and the resources and so on will be going to the NGR. So Chair, with those slides, that's the briefing of the National Gambling Amendment Bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Masaja. I know that you have been well advised by your legal teams in TTR, but also some of your colleagues that are here with you. We also know that in what you have presented to us, you have also taken into consideration the deliberations in the National Assembly. We are, however, not here to just accept what comes from there. We need to interrogate that. But we know that our key mandate comes from our public hearings and consultations with our provincial legislatures. We, however, need to be prepared as delegates here to competently and confidently present this to our provinces. And therefore, we have the opportunity now to engage with what has been presented to us. I particularly want to note what is mentioned on page 15 of the document before us, which says that most of the provisions are merely technical or editorial to clarify provisions in the Act, and that the most is to replace either the words board or CEO with the words National Gambling Regulator. So we'll have those type of amendments that I think we will note. If we have particular questions, however, about that, we have no rule that inhibits us from raising any question that we may have. I will just want to explain the procedure to us, that we're going to have a cluster of questions and then allow you the opportunity to answer. If I consider a question to be unfair, I would say so. However, we are hoping that we wouldn't have those unfair questions, because all the engagement and the depth of the engagement is what is important. So we'd want you to note almost all the questions that come. I think what we'll do is take like three hands in one round and then give you an opportunity to respond and then take the others. We would want to make sure that all the members do enjoy the right to raise their questions. I note for now the Honourable Faber, then the Honourable Hai, then the... Okay. Because you're both from the Eastern Cape, I wanted to bring in another province. But let's deal with the Eastern Cape. Let's have those three hands first, and then for the second round, we'll take the Honourable Dikhale, the Honourable okay, the Blanche. Are you okay? Are you? No. Okay. Then we have two hands for the second round. I'll add mine to the second round. Honourable Faber, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. Yes, Chairperson, yes, obviously it's a Section 76 bill which has all the provinces included to give their input as well. I know this has been in front of the National Assembly Portfolio Committee. But as you said before as well, now it comes to this committee and to the provinces, where our provinces will hopefully also have public participation, which will again bring more inputs from public. And I believe that we should also then be their chairperson to also listen to what the people say, because to be quite frank, we have not been involved with this bill.
up to actually now. So we've just read that came from the Portfolio Committee. Chairperson, I just want to start by, firstly, I understand that we want to go from a gambling board to a gambling regulator. As I've also noticed is that the gambling board has been under administration for quite a while. I would like to know what the impact of that was on gambling as such, specifically where we go on online gambling. Did this have an effect on online gambling specifically? As we know, this has been a huge problem. I think you have been at this committee previously on a presentation, Chairperson, where online gambling was seen to be a problem, and I wanted to know how far have they got to that on protecting South Africans on all these overseas online gambling that's been going on. Then on the gambling board, obviously the lottery board and the gambling board goes together. I want to know, and my recommendation would be, if there is a gambling regulator, that then the lottery board and the gambling board, all of these should fall under this one regulator, because we've got so many, everyone's sitting on his own heap and running everything. Instead, let us, as the DTI should have had it from the start, working with one regulator, regulating the whole lot. You've just told us now in your presentation how you can't get a quorum for 1 year. Now, I mean, this is unacceptable. How can you do anything if you can't have a quorum in a year? You can't take any decisions. So Chairperson, if we can maybe just get clarity on that as well, between the National Lottery Board, because obviously they've been operating, I'm sure they have, because we see the lottery winnings, it's just me not winning, but obviously they're operating. Chairperson, and to know then on this gambling board and lottery board, can they all fall under one gambling regulator? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, firstly, my comments, which I think the department should respond to. I'm concerned about the long process that it took the department to come up with this legislation to Parliament. If you listen to the presenter, talk, the issue in the department started in 2015, but it was only brought to Parliament in 2018. The reason I'm concerned is that the possibility that we'll be here in Parliament until the end of March this year. After that, we're going for the election campaign, and those will be coming back. I mean, this whole process will be collapsed. It will have to be started from afresh. So perhaps you could, because also this is amendment. It's not like it's a law, a comprehensive law. It's just amendments. And when you look at the amendments, one is thinking why it took so long just on amendment. There's not much in this bill amendment. There's not much that will take 3 years within the department and then only come to Parliament in August. I think those are the comments that I would like the department to respond to. But also, with regard to the National Gambling Regulator and the board, there's no motivation as to why moving from board to the regulator. You're not telling us what are the reasons, you know, so that as this committee we can consider and agree with you based on the motivation that you are expressing. But also, I don't understand why then if there's a challenge with the council, why then the department or the minister then decide on the policy matters as a department that is responsible, rather than leaving this to the council that never sit in any case. Even with this proposal, that if there is no quorum today, and therefore tomorrow, the majority of those present could take a decision. I mean, that could also be challenged by those who were not in the meeting, that perhaps those who are not in the meeting are the majority, and those that are in the meeting are the minority, but because they maybe three are in favor and one is not in favor, if you got four people and then you say that decision is taken, I think for me, I'm not a legal fund, that could be challenged. If, for example, we have 10 people that have not attended the meeting, five have attended in the next meeting, and out of the five, four vote in favor of those decisions, and then you say that decision that decision is valid, I disagree. But we need a legal opinion. Perhaps the legal parliamentary legal services should advise us on this one. That's why then for me, I think perhaps the best way is to do away with the council, and then the minister take decision on those policy matters rather than leaving it to the council that never sit in any way. And then with regard to the unlawful winnings, it says that in the past it used to go to the revenue fund. Is that the case? But now you said it must go to the National Gambling Regulator. Would that be regarded as part of the budget then of the income of the regulator? And if how would that be used? I'm raising this because with regard to other penalties that other institutions, for example, Competition Commission, you would know that with the penalties, those monies would, some would go to the revenue fund. Others would be used for any cause. For example, a recent one, I think the media that was involved in the collusion, the monies that they were penalized for would be used to advance the economic development. Chair, also the question then would be, what would be then be the role of the provincial gambling boards? If now you have a regulator at the national level, if you can explain that for us. The last point, the unlawful gambling, you say they will be disqualified for a period of 5 years. Is that enough in terms of the penalties for those that are gambling unlawfully? What do you say with regard to repeated offenders? Because those may not apply within 5 years, but then later on they apply and then they repeat the same offense. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The Honourable Duba.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, I think my first I think correctly, as we have said, that as provinces and the public will still have gone, will have a bite on this bill, you know, will have the opportunity. But I just want to get a few clarities. One, the problem gamblers, do we have a register for problem gamblers? Just want clarity for that. And then, secondly, on the issue of the currently anything that is forfeited to the state, my understanding is that whatever damage that has been caused to the victim, the state is able to assist in terms of redistribution the money to the people. Now, what is the logic behind this issue of saying let the money be now be forfeited to the NGR, and unless DDG is saying because you want to budget, you know, you want to use the money, as Honorable Rai said, you want to use the money's budget for it, so that it comes out clearly. But then the question will then follow, how sustainable is that
if you want that to be part of your mainstream in terms of budgeting. And pardon me, Chair, I would like the clause 12, if you can repeat clause 12. I didn't hear it properly. On the issue of the clause 26, the majority quorum, probably Honorable Khai, we might have had the same thing in mind. I'm worried about the issue of accountability and governance. I'm not sure how legal it is, this issue, unless perhaps the chair, we can get a definition of a quorum in terms of the bill. What is the definition of a quorum? If you have a different definition of a quorum, because the very same, whether you talk of ministers, MECs or provinces, that you say they are not attending and therefore delaying. Further down the presentation, it talks even further of collaboration of the NGR with other departments, you know. So I'm just, I have a little bit of, not a problem, Chair, but if I can get more clarity, because we'll raise our views at the province. I don't want to raise my views, but I just want to get more clarity. Whether, if I were to assume that this is kind of running away from accountability and proper governance, because you further say, DDG, now we are changing to NGR, led by the CEO. So everything is going to be administrative, you know. MSs are not there, ministers are not there, everybody who is a politician is not there. So Tina is administrators who are there. Let's run with it, you know. If we have the board of them and E4 comes, you know, and the next time 4 comes, 3 out of that 4 decide. So it's if that can actually be clear in my mind, that how are you going to address the issues of accountability? The inspectorate, Chair, lastly, the issue of the inspectorate. If the DDG perhaps can put me at ease, how are we going to do this thing of whether the provincial inspectors are there or not there, the national inspectors will do it. I think that's what DDG would say. National inspectors, whether province is there or not there, will do it. And if you can just clear in my mind that there is this, we're not talking about a bill that's sold to arrogant, you know, and will find resistance on the ground, especially with authorities at provincial level. I just wanted to get those clarities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Duba. I'm going to give over to the DGI to respond. Before I do that, just welcome Honourable Msanga. We have had the presentation done. We're just busy with the questions now. Please, can I confine you with time? It's now 5 past. Say we give you 15 minutes to work on all the responses for this particular, then we take questions and give you 15 minutes again.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. I will respond to the questions, and then my colleagues will come in to assist, especially from the NGP. In terms of the first question, Honourable Faber, regarding the administrator, the administrator is currently the one that is in the leadership of the NGP. And as a department, we are mindful of the fact that this has been the case for many years since the time the board was dissolved. But in terms of the impact of the gambling board, the performance of the board has been very very, I would say, successful. The impact, the performance has been well. It's been good performance, and the administrator will come in to add on the issues of online gambling. I know that this is one of the issues that is being tackled by the board. And online gambling, it is a challenge, as we all know. Hence, there are different views about how it should be addressed. There are those who say, let's make it available, let's regulate it. And then we are still saying that it has got negative implications and it needs more controls. And it's something that we should retain as prohibited. So I would say that there are efforts in terms of combating online gambling. Whether to measure the success as to saying that we are succeeding to deal with all the implications of online gambling, it's something that is work in progress. It's something that we are working on. So the administrator will give some of the indications of some of the efforts we are undertaking to address it. But in terms of the performance of the administrator versus the board itself, there has been the performance has been very good. The organization is stabilized, and there is good work that the board is doing with the administrator. Regarding the Lotteries Board, which is the National Lotteries Commission now, and the Gambling Board as one regulator, this is one of the issues that is, I would say, is under discussion, not necessarily in the department per se. It has been flagged by stakeholders. And also from one of the reports that we conducted some few years ago, when one of the recommendations was talking to this issue. It's a policy discussion for the future, I would say, Honourable Member. It's something that will require a further engagement on. It is there as a possibility. But where we are now, we have the two institutions, the Gambling Board and the National Lotteries Commission, tackling different issues of gambling and lotteries and illegal activities that are impacting gambling in the Republic. So as a proposal, it's something that is there, but I think it's not a policy position of the department to say we will have one regulator for both of them. But it's not. But it's maybe for future discussions, it's something that might be part of the agenda going forward. It has been proposed by different stakeholders. It's noted. And in terms of the long process, Honorable Khaya, in terms of the process of the bill, why the department took so long, I think I should emphasize that the bill was very comprehensive initially. When we started this process of the National Gambling Amendment Bill, it included very contentious issues. There were many contentious issues that were included. One of them was around the lotteries, the bookmakers that participate in activities of lotteries, for instance. So when we were addressing the bill last year with the portfolio committee, many of those were removed. For example, the issues of the regulation of horse racing. The regulation of horse racing was also inserted in the bill. So the bill was more comprehensive, and I think one of the things that affected the timing is around the consultations. I think there were many extensive consultations that were undertaken by the department that impacted to some extent on the delays to the bill. But we do acknowledge your point that this may affect the future of the bill if we don't meet the issues around the timelines. So it is a concern. Why the regulator versus the board? Maybe it's something that sometimes when you deal with an issue for too long, you take for granted that people don't really know the whys behind why certain things are there. As a department, we promote strong regulators. And we did a study where we looked at the rationalization of our entities overall. And one of the findings was that regulator structures are stronger than board structures. And so it was a board before, and then the board is no longer there. But then the decision was that having a strong regulator is very, it's promoted, and the recommendations were more for regulators. Hence, if you look at our entities, they are more regulators, whether it's National Consumer Commission, they operate like regulators more than boards. The National Credit Regulator used to have a board. It's one of our entities. Now the regulator is a regulator. We have a National Credit Regulator. It used to have a board before. So we've moved away from board structures. Hence, the emphasis to have the regulator as the regulator, but also to strengthen the enforcement of the enforcement element of what the National Gambling Regulator can be able to do to assist with combating different issues around gambling, illegal gambling activities and so on. So that was one of the rationale, to say let's have it as a regulator, let's not have a board anymore because it had a board structure. So we adopted the same approach with the others to say let's move to a regulator structure versus having a board with a CEO and so on. So hence, and to make it uniform with our other regulatory structures that we are having in the country that we are regulating as a department. And then the policy council is prescribed. So it's a prescribed. I'll ask Mr. Mashamaiti after the administrator talks to just give a sense of how it is in terms of the quorum. It's prescribed in terms of who, how many members, how many MECs determine a quorum, the minister's role, and who should come into it. So it's not something that we can easily put away. So hence, we are bringing it as an amendment. There has been many challenges with the, even as regulated as it is, there has been challenges with the council, the policy council. And to get to the point where we are proposing this majority in the second meeting can make a decision, it's because there are different options that we tried. One of them is around the round robin. One of them is to make sure that MECs confirm until the last day, and on the last day they don't show up. And we think that one can argue quorums have got rules in terms of you cannot make a decision without other members present in the meeting. But we think that if it's in the, we've debated it legally, if it's in the legislation, it is in the legislation, meaning that it has to be complied with as it is. The challenge is that we know that it's a challenging one, hence even in the public hearings, provinces had concerns with that. There are gambling activities that are taking place. There are inconsistencies in terms of how different provinces approach policy and legislation. And because this is a concurrent function that is also stemming from the Constitution, we have to work together in that cooperative governance framework. It is something that has to be that way. It's stemming from the Constitution. It's stemming from the Gambling Act itself. So it's not something that the minister can undertake on his own without a proper amendment to the legislation. So it is to get to this point, it's those different options were considered to a point where we say we can only look at it from this angle. So it's a proposal that we think may work, meaning if MECs, three MECs decide on the day of the meeting because maybe there's an agenda item that is not in favor or they have different views upon it, if they will have to make sure they're there, because if they're not there, a decision can be taken. But it's not to, it's not meant in a negative way. It's just to ensure that these matters are addressed. There's a market out there of gambling. There are challenges out there, and we do need that collaboration and coordination. In terms of the unlawful winnings, yes, the unlawful winnings for future, we are proposing that the funds go to the NGR once it's regulated. Reason being that we know currently where we are in the country, there are austerity measures, there are issues of costs and budget, and it's a reality that the state is dealing with currently, and probably with the economy as it is, maybe in the foreseeable future as well. So because of that, we think that this will empower the NGR, NGB, to be able to play a more active role to combat illegal gambling activities. We really think that if the unlawful winnings can add to their funding model, it will make a difference in terms of some of the issues like your online gambling, dealing with different issues that come up with these activities. And then the removal from the list, is it enough for the unlawful, I mean the illegal operators? I think from our side, These issues come with other legal implications, but we think that it's a measure, it's a control mechanism, and this will affect the reputation of that particular operator, and that will also maybe deter others from participating in illegal activities. So in terms of is this strong enough, that's a debatable issue, but then the administrator can come in there maybe to indicate what from their perspective, their view on this. But I think that we think that it's a strong deterrent enough to say if you are operating. Obviously, there are legal mechanisms that can still be taken against that operator, but then also addressing them by removing them from participation. It's another deterrent, and it can also discourage others from participating in this in these illegal activities. And clause 12, which amends section 27, we have a national central electronic monitoring system currently that looks that is in the auspices of the National Gambling Board. It's a monitoring system that gathers. We have a central electronic monitoring system, but it's limited only to limited payout machines. And this monitoring system is important in terms of ensuring that there's data, there's coordinated information of gambling. And we think that now the proposal with the legislation is to extend that it applies to other modes of gambling. And currently, it's the operators in the provinces, they are also involved in this activity. And by allowing the National Gambling Board to have access and oversight over these NSEMs will assist us with ensuring the credibility of the information and the system of gambling activities in the country, also to be able to detect the different challenges around this area of the NSEMs. So that's the proposal around the NSEMs. That is section 27 of the bill.
You have 5 minutes.
Okay. So in terms of the definition of the quorum, the act does define. Mr. Mashama, they will assist me. I think it's 5 MECs, is it?
Yeah, it's 5 MECs and minister. The quorum is 5 MECs and minister. So there is a veto. If minister doesn't support it and MEC support it, there won't be a decision, vice versa. If minister want to move with it and the MECs don't, then there cannot be a decision. But it must be resolved by 5 MECs with minister.
In terms of the inspectorate, we are not saying that with or without, we are saying with or without the provinces, but it's not meant in an arrogant manner. There has been challenges around the inspectorate from national because it would require certain permissions to go and do certain functions in the provinces. So this is more about strengthening the inspectorate in the country to enable the National Gambling Board, if it needs to combat a particular activity, if there is no, maybe let's say there is unavailability of the provinces, to be able to do certain functions. But the point here is to encourage collaboration between the provinces and the National Gambling Board. But it's more about empowerment of the board to be able to do certain activities on inspectorate that they are currently not able to do. Administrator, if you maybe can come in quickly to clarify some of the issues.
Through you, Chairperson, to just add, and hopefully we'll not reiterate what the DDG has indicated, we'll just try and respond from an implementation point of view. The impact and effect of online gambling, how far are punters protected, how we've been... The issue of combating online gambling, we have been able to make progress, and even at a national and provincial level, there has been progress. However, when we get to the actual prosecution of the cases, that's where we have been having challenges. And the challenges basically are securing servers that ordinarily are not even in South Africa to prove that a particular gambling activity has taken place. As a form of protection of punters, what the message we've been sending out is the fact that if at the end of the day a punter partakes in online gambling, when payments are to be effected, which is through the banking system, that is when we've been confiscating the money, because it is difficult. Online gambling is within a private space, and it is an individual who interacts through a device. with the issue. So we've been sending that message. You may have access to the internet or online platforms. However, when you're trying to get your payments, then we confiscate. And then the issue of NLC and NGB, DDG has indicated, yes, it's an issue for further policy discussion. And we also just wanted to remind the members that in terms of Schedule 4 of the Constitution, lotteries isn't listed as a matter for concurrent jurisdiction. So that's how far it stretches. Being from trade and industry also, the lotteries is purely for good causes and is a state lottery, so there may be implications from a constitutional perspective and also a decision at national and provincial level at the end of the day whether then all revenue from gambling will then go towards contribution of good causes. Otherwise, we will await the advice from an implementation perspective. And then further motivation regarding NGB towards the regulator, just from an implementation point of view and experience through the transition process as administrator, the entity was able to function effectively. Also because when we had a board, most operational matters, even just day-to-day running of the entity, had to await the board to consider. But most importantly, when you look at the National Gambling Board versus the Provincial Gambling Board, the National Gambling Board doesn't do any licensing or decide or approve any gambling license application. It's more an advisory enforcement body, and that then suits and is part of the motivation towards why a national regulator, we further set norms and standards. So it has simply proven more effective from an implementation point of view. And then whether the unlawful winnings will be part of the budget, it would not be possible to proactively budget and rely on the winnings. But however, if one is to consider Section 74 of the Act, we are permitted to raise revenue from other sources over and above the grant that we receive from the DTI. And ultimately, whatever revenue that the NGR or NGB receives then will ultimately go back to the revenue fund. The unlawful winnings that are intended for the NGR to receive will just assist with the amount of money then spent on enforcement. Also, the reason why and the motivation why we're suggesting that this automatic forfeiture is that it has proven really costly to get unlawful winnings forfeit. For example, the winnings as they come in, they range from 100 rand to any amount, could be even a million. But when we have to go to the High Court, to just get junior counsel, it's approximately 30,000 rand for them to deal with the matter. And when you compare to what then the regulatory cost is for government, because at the end of the day we are receiving our funds from government, it's very, very expensive. So that is the motivation regards that. Then the NGR versus the role of the provincial gambling boards. In terms of the amendment bill, provincial gambling boards are not impacted in terms of their authority as it stands in licensing gambling, ensuring enforcement, and the regulator is there to enhance. The regulator still remains as an oversight body to ensure then there's uniformity and harmonization, and simply to complement what the provincial gambling boards are doing. And then on the issue of whether we have a register for problem gamblers, we do. It's actually called the self-exclusion register. So that register still exists.
And we are currently considering the regulations on self-exclusions to deal with that. So over time and from the inception, those who believe they have a problem with gambling are encouraged to come and self-register themselves, and we call it a self-exclusion process. From there, it is then recommended that they go to the National Responsible Gambling Foundation, and this is the foundation set up where each gambling operator contributes to the existence of that organization, which then ensures that they receive free counseling. So that is how the process then is assisting in that regard, and that's what we have in place. And then I'm not sure if there's any other issue. Is it the inspector?
Yeah, because I think we also need to clarify. I've noted that members were using the word the NGR and NGPC interchangeably. When we talk about Quorum, we are referring to the National Gambling Policy Council, which is chaired by Minister, and members include MECs as well, the purpose of which is policy coordination. And there was a hint whether we should actually disband that body. It is that also a difficulty, because there will be no coordination now at national and provincial policy issues. There will be conflict every time if we don't have that body. That is the purpose it was actually set up for. It is to ensure that we do not have conflicts of policy for that people. So it will be a very difficult thing for us to do, and that is why desperately we feel maybe we should just allow this quorum in the manner that we have actually proposed now. I just felt I needed to clarify in terms of the structure, so that we know the National Gambling Regulator will be taking over from the National Gambling Board, which had a board structure, and it will no longer have a board structure going forward. And then the National Gambling Policy Council is as such. And the purpose is just National Gambling Board is oversight on provinces to ensure that they adhere to the national norms set out in the National Gambling Act every time when they are regulating gambling. Because, like I said, there are harms of gambling that needs to be looked at as well every time when we are regulating gambling. I think basically that is all I think needed to be clarified from my side.
Thank you very much. Now I'm asking you to empathize with the members of Parliament when you see them standing at the podium in front and complaining that, Chairperson, Madam Speaker, my time is not up. It has taken you 20 minutes. The clock just goes faster in the precincts of Parliament. Let's now have the second round, please. Thanks for the answers to that first round. What was the sequence again? Do we start with Honourable Dikhale, and then we have the Honourable Terblanche? The other members are still covered. Okay. We'll have the two of you, and then I'll just add. Honourable Dikhale, please.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My question is on slide number 6. With regard to the meeting that was held on the 16th of October 1829, where they resolved that the challenges of the National Gambling Policy Council and the National Central Electronic Monitoring System in the bill and other aspects will be considered by the next parliament. My question is, why are they shifting the responsibility to the next parliament? Was those challenges so difficult that they cannot deal with them themselves? That's my question. And the other one, though it was well touched by the Honorable Khai, and I heard the response, but I still want to put my question on clause number 3, slide number 9, whereby they are dealing with unlawful gambling operators. I just want to check as to how are they going to spot on those unlawful gambling operators. And I know this one, Chair, might not be in their shoes, but I still want them to assist me. In my province in Limpopo, there are these 5-year gamblers. How do they really assist the villagers? Because those people are collecting money like nobody's business, twice in a day, in the morning and in the afternoon. Well, the third one was on the issue of the Quran, but I am well covered. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Khale. Honorable Toulach.
Chairperson, thank you. Let me start by apologizing. You know, I haven't been part of the process before, so maybe I'm going to touch on unnecessary things, but I'll try to, you know, just manage it down. Chairperson, the public hearings I want to start here. I heard that we had two public hearings. My question is, where was that done? Where was the public hearings done? Which part of the country, the two of them? Chairperson, the second question, I think that was well and extensively covered by the DDG and also the administrator about the board against the, you know, the regulator. And maybe just a comment from my side. They convinced me, so you can relax. But, you know, a name change is not necessarily going to rectify the situation. And that was just my concern, but you explained in detail, so I'll leave it at that. Chairperson, then, this question of the quorum, I can't believe what I heard. I really can't believe that. We are battling to get the quorum, and then we are satisfied that, say, there are 5 people or 10 or how many there are, that the two remaining, the two that made the effort to come there, they can take decisions, and that decision can go on for the next 2 years, according to your own presentation. I don't think we can operate like that. Chairperson, there is something, there's a, you know, obviously that issue of the quorum needs to be resolved at another level. You know, even in Parliament here, in our committee, you know, we cannot just sit at home and say, no, you know, I'm not going to be there. No, there's not a quorum of the remaining two can take decisions. No. If Parliament must be here, that people must be there. And really, I don't support this, Chairperson. I don't. I strongly object to that. That is not good lawmaking. It's bad lawmaking. I'm sorry to say it straight. Chairperson, then the round robin. It is extensively used as a medium across the world. And how on earth can it not work in this environment? I don't believe it. So really, no. From my side, no. And the last time, no. Definitely not. Chairperson, and then the question of, you know, okay, we heard about illegal operators or whatever. And my question is, you know, from a legal perspective, how is that determined? I haven't had the opportunity to read the bill. So I am confident, knowing how bills work, that that will be covered in here. But, you know, how do we determine somebody picked around the corner is now suddenly illegal? Surely there must be a process. You know, before you can say that this person is an illegal operator, and my question is how? How do we get to that point? Chairperson, and then another thing that I really cannot understand is this question of the money that gets collected goes now to, you know, what is that body again? To the operator, what? No, the regulator. Are we going, and that is my question, are we going to allow now on a police station or the police all fines, admission of guilt that is going to be paid at the charge of us? Are we going to allow them to keep that also to improve their work? I mean, it's the same principle. Are we going to allow the courts, the fines that they fine people there, if paid, that the Department of Justice can keep it? That is not a good principle. Fact of the matter is, Chairperson, it's a good principle that people need to get their budget through the budgeting process. Because you cannot determine, you know, you cannot determine the amount of money that is going to be raised through that process. And if this illegal way of doing things creates 100 million, are we still going to allow that people to sit with that money? Once again, it's a bad principle. And I'm strongly objecting to that as well. Chairperson, I'm just about there. Okay, for now, Chairperson, that is all. But I would like to get clarity on that. And as I said, I really was a bit disturbed to hear, you know, this in this presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Before I raise my two questions, can I just say to the person who is with the parliamentary legal team, there was that question raised earlier on, particularly related to the quorum, and the Honourable Dukhai was saying, let's get a legal opinion on that. So if you want to, I want to allow you before the DTI response to just talk on that. My first question would relate to page 3, and it's a very easy one, where the slide there right on the left bottom of that, or rather the block in the right left bottom, you're saying that the Act is not promulgated. Can you just explain that to us? It comes from 2008. Right, my next question is, I just want to make sure that you've done it. I think you have said that you've done it. We are also dealing with the challenges of the fourth industrial revolution and how technology is going to impact on that. Now, as the Honourable Blanche has just said, we've not looked at what you presented to us today before we received it last week. Now, have you accommodated the challenges of the fourth industrial revolution in the amendments that you are putting before us today? Then my final thing would just be more in the form of a comment than a question. I think it's important for us honourable members to know the difference between when we talk about lotteries, between Ituba, who has the gambling license, and the National Lotteries Board, who is now the National Lotteries Commission. Right? That Ituba generates the money, they run the machines, they do the gambling. Right? It's like almost a private company. They competed for the license. That's not a government agency. Whatever money they generate, they give an agreed proportion of that money to the board, and the board then deals with that money in the National Lotteries Commission, where you have your different distributing agencies that distribute that money. So you have that distinction. And when we talk now about the institutions that we are looking at in this amendment, let us just bear that in mind. That if we, for example, talk about the regulator and we talk about the board, where I said, I'm saying that a board cannot write its own regulations. Right? So what is the function, when we look at this legislation, what is the function of that regulator? It's meant to regulate the gambling industry. Right? Therefore, it can exist in its own right. But if we look now at the licensees for the national lottery, that becomes a different industry from the point that Honorable Dikhale raised, which is that small group in the village that runs a Fafi, or a machine that we have there in Alexander Township, hidden behind the Shebeen, where you can make a few rands, We're not talking about that. We're looking at the big institutions, like, for example, at your Sun Cities, at your, and we have these gambling houses, I don't know what you call them, casinos. You have your casinos in all the metros, and there's a lot of money being generated there. And we're saying, how do we deal with that? Just the final one is related to the point that I made about the fourth industrial revolution. So here is this clever boy who is 14 years old, he has good experience in IT, and he sits on his dad's or his mom's iPad and he gambles. And he wins money. Right, what this legislation is saying, when he wins money, he cannot get it. Can't go to the bank. But when he loses money, his father and his mother, because he chose their data and their airtime and things like that. So let's just be human when we look at this. But where the problem lies in is not that 14-year-old brilliant youngster. The problem comes with this man who is working his butt. He gets the money, he then takes the money, and rather than going home to his loved ones, he goes to a casino or wherever, and he gambles that money. And he goes home with nothing. And it's amazing how addictive that becomes to many people. And we're saying this legislation is to protect people like that. When we talk about the inspectors and when we talk about the habitual gambler, just to emphasize that, so that we do not lose focus about what exactly we're trying to do. Honorable Faber, I don't like doing it, but I will allow you as the first meeting of the year.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, I'm very glad that you did raise that, because we were talking of the profits and how to use the profits as well. And I would really like to know how much of this profit that's been made are being spent on that father that has a problem with gambling. To recuperate it, because it is an illness, as you get alcoholism. How much of this money is really spent on helping these people? Because I had a friend long time ago, and I don't want to go into history, that had a gambling problem. He actually got divorced because of that, because he gambled his whole salary away. Now, his wife went to the casino, and it was said that he had himself have to actually go and put his name up. And I mean, if I'm a compulsive gambler, I will not go and give my name up. And this is what I want to know. What are you doing, and is there enough funding of the profits made available to go and help these, so much the family, but to protect this family from their own father, to actually help him not to be addicted anymore? Is there programs in place? Because I never heard anything about that. Chairperson, then just I think three of us as members were talking about it, of people not finding a quorum. As I understand, the board has been under administration for quite a while. Now, if they've been under administration, then there don't need to be a quorum, because the administrator is running it. So I need to know, are you talking about the quorum that's not been there before it's been under administration, or what quorum are you talking about? Because I'm getting a bit confused. As it's been under administration, then there should not be a quorum, because the administrator is doing the job. If I can just have clarity on that, Chief.
The last speaker just answered that, but he'll do it for you again. Can I just emphasize that when the Honorable Faber talks about the profit, right? When Honorable Faber talks about the profit, he's not talking about Prophet Makuwe. Can we give you again your 15 minutes on those? It's easier and less than the second, than the first round, but we'll allocate 15 minutes for that, please.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. Regarding the question around Honorable Dikhale, why certain issues have been taken out to the next parliament. What like I've indicated earlier, the bill was very comprehensive. It had many issues that it was addressing, from horse racing, from combating issues of illegal activities around the lotteries and so on, and it was reduced significantly. And we are saying, we are not saying what is under the discussion now should be to the next parliament, but there were those other additional issues that were removed from the bill that we then said they would be considered, or they could be considered in the next parliament. So this is not for what we are discussing now, although we are mindful of the fact that there are time constraints. So that is just to clarify that we are not shifting this bill to the next parliament, but there were elements that were in the bill that will be considered for the next parliament, because they are no longer under consideration, like your horse raising issues. And regarding the issue of FAFI, the legislation around FAFI, or what we are doing about FAFI. FAFI is one of the activities that, it's a gambling activity that is undertaken in our communities. And it's one area that, when research is being conducted by the board and also the NLC, I think they're looking at that issue as well. It's an area of concern. And I think it's one of the policy issues that we'll need to strengthen going forward in terms of what do we do about FAFI. But I know also provinces may have other activities around this. But from a policy point of view, it's one of the issues that needs to be addressed in the future going forward, because it's an activity, but it's not something that we're even addressing in the bill. And we haven't formulated a proper policy position around FAFI, but we are aware that it is a concern. And when we look at research and other initiatives around gambling activities, we do also look into it. We touch base on it. And in terms of the question by Honorable Terry Blanche around the public hearings, the public hearings that we are referring to here are the ones that took place through the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry. It was a two-day process where stakeholders, after submitting their public comments, came and then gave their views on how they perceive the bill. So it happened last year in the Portfolio Committee. It's one of the processes that unfolded around it. And they came to Parliament, Chair. It happened in Parliament, yes. The quorum discussion, Honourable Member, we do understand. In fact, even in the public hearings, there was this, and there was a huge concern about it, to say, why not round robin? But with the evidence of what we did so far as the department, the round robin option has not worked. It has not worked. And you are right, maybe in other platforms it's an option. But when you look at the significant impact of gambling in the country and the harmful effects, and I'm glad some of the examples were raised here about family members who use their salaries to gamble away instead of going home and so on, there's a big outcry out there. And we are having a challenge between profit making versus the social consideration of the harmful effects of gambling. And this platform is for harmonization and coordinating activities of gambling, because provinces may have different considerations. When you look at revenue maximization, we look at what is the best balance in terms of policies that will ensure the harmful effects of gambling are limited. For instance, there's a debate that let's have online gambling. We are saying let's restrict it because of the harmful effects. So that's the problem we have. So if certain decisions are not taken, we are left in that cloud of then what do we do? And because of this forum not being so functional, different provinces do different things, activities or decisions that impact negatively as well in the gambling sphere. So we really think, even though it may look a bit unreasonable as it looks, but we think this is the best approach, given that other options were tested and they have not worked so far. And we think that this coordination platform is very critical. And Chair, regarding, I'm not sure if I got your question about the legal team, whether it was referred to the legal team about the quorum?
It was
referred to the legal team.
Because the Honourable Chai particularly asked if the legal team want to express themselves on that, and I wanted to give them the opportunity. But you finish then.
All right. Okay, on the question of the regulator and raising funds, and if this principle could be applied in other institutions like your police, if it's acceptable, we think that every situation is unique, and we have considered this in the context of the gambling board or the gambling regulator, and the regulators the regulator is allowed to raise funds, and this is one of the avenues that we have thought could be explored, and we think that it will assist in terms of the enforcement of gambling activities, and the amounts are not even probably you cannot determine how much they will be. There will be funding from government, but we think that given the serious nature and the impact of gambling activities in the country, this is very important that we allow the regulator the ability to raise funding in this context. And regarding the promulgated Act of 2008, Chair, the Gambling Amendment Act of 2008 is an act of law, but it is not in effect. It has not been promulgated. There were certain decisions or processes that were undertaken by the Portfolio Committee to look at the gambling activities of the country holistically. We were going to regulate interactive gambling with that bill, but because of the harmful impact of gambling, the negative harmful impact of gambling and other consideration, the policy stance was to retain the position of prohibiting online gambling. So that legislation was not made effective. So it is a law of the land, however, it's not promulgated. So we do have that legislation. However, we are still having a policy position to prohibit online gambling. So that's the status of it. And in terms of the other issues around the policy council, I think we've tried to clarify them. And then the gambling activities and the programs, I will give this to the regulator, to the administrator, to just give an indication of some of the activities that we have as government in terms of the problem gambling activities. But problem gambling is a serious problem, and we encourage that we should have more programs to combat it in the country.
Through you, chairpersons, and in response to the honourable member's questions, in terms of clause 3, how do we identify illegal gambling operators? From the onset, we are saying an illegal gambling operator is someone who is conducting illegal gambling activities. For example, currently the disguised internet cafes, we've conducted raids with the provinces, with law enforcement agencies. They have establishments there. They're operating as illegal gambling operators. And what we're saying is then that after the court process, after a conviction has been secured, then only can we list you, and that is the process. We will not simply identify without any legal basis or following any legal procedure to then put you on that register. And then in terms of ordinarily the gambling regulations, we have probity investigations that are conducted for any operator or individual would be working in the gambling industry or an operator that should be awarded a license. They go through probity. As part of one of the questions in probity would be, have you been convicted? So what we are saying is we are simply trying to make it even more difficult and to ensure that from the onset when a provincial gambling board conducts probity, they would even look at the register as a reference to see whether you've previously been listed, and understanding then your conduct or your nature, because at the end of the day then your juristic persons would tie to individuals who would have faced conviction, criminal conviction in court. So that is the process. And then regarding the issue of unlawful winnings, we still remain a juristic person as National Gambling Regulator, Schedule 3 entity in terms of the PFMA. So irrespective of the authority in terms of Section 74 of the Act and the amendments,
how we are permitted to raise revenue, we are still accountable and held responsible to manage expenditure in terms of the budget, then that is approved by the DTI, and Treasury then has full view of this. So it is not a situation where we are then raising further revenue and then we do as we please. We are confined to what it is we present and plan in terms of budgeting. For enforcement, we're simply saying that there is a regulatory cost for legalization of any industry. There's a regulatory cost, and the cost of enforcement, for example, we also gave unlawful winnings, even to go out to get inspectors, to go out to assist law enforcement, there is a cost to that, and as it stands, this is simply to complement. And then the chairperson's question to say, have we embraced the fourth industrial revolution in this bill? The provision relating to extending NSEMs to all modes of gambling, that's how we are saying, and we've had to ask ourselves this question over and over, that embracing the fourth industrial revolution is, in as much as it involves technology, we are saying that we are looking at ways in which we can use technology to enable the National Gambling Regulator to execute its mandate. So the NSEMs, which is purely within that space, is meant for that purpose. And another important thing is it actually assists currently only in the LPM industry. If extended to other modes of gambling, then we have regulatory certainty, even in terms of the tax that provincial government is collecting, because then the system monitors directly, and it doesn't take away from what is currently done. Right now, for example, from a casino perspective, the province will rely on the casino system and what has been recorded as gross gambling revenue, and thereafter your tax then is calculated. And what we are saying is we would then have a third-party verification system or source to then verify that, and that's how it currently works for the LPM industry and has been working well. It definitely does not take away from what is already in place, but yet again enhancing our oversight responsibility. Then the last question on our part was, how are we dealing with the responsible gambling programs? They are in place. To start with, it is a license condition for each gambling operator to contribute 0.1% of their gross gambling revenue. So holistically, gross gambling revenue in terms of our latest statistics would have been last year approximately 27 billion, and the 0.1% then equals 27 million. That 27 million is then the budget of the National Responsible Gambling Foundation. And on the board of the National Responsible Gambling Foundation, we have provincial gambling boards and representatives from the gambling industry licensees. And that is where then licensees and provincial gambling boards meet to discuss then what programs then are rolled out. As part of the educational programs and awareness in terms of the activities of the foundation is also the free treatment. So they are specialists who then or counselors or psychologists who the foundation then appoints, and that is accessible provincially. And that's basically how it's being treated with. In the world, there are different models. You either place that responsibility on the operators to contribute, or government can also take a decision to fund. But the South African model is as it stands. DDG also indicated that there are more substantive provisions that the bill did have. And one of the provisions was for the regulator in this regard. It was proposed that the regulator would have to set up a rehabilitation program. So then we would have to raise funding in order to deal with that. But yet again, we are saying it's one of the issues then that was left to the more substantive provisions to come in the future when there's a revision of the National Gambling Act.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Are we okay to end that session? We want to thank you very much for the very informative session that we have had. We appreciate the opportunity to have been able to engage and enrich our understanding, which would hopefully prepare us all as we engage further, both with our deliberations in the provinces and also when we as a select committee would invite oral and written submissions as well. Honourable Mtlanga? No, I said if they want to. So the fact that they're not raising their hands says to me that they are okay. Honourable members, my watch is 10 to 12. We were working on concluding at 4:15. We're running ahead of things. Let's hear from the team from DTI. Do you have anything else you want to cover? Are you okay? You're okay. Thank you. Let's then follow with the next item on the agenda, which is for us to look at the consolidated program. I hope we all have a copy before us. Yesterday we got the one from Economic and Business Development, and we agreed that we'd like to see them together. So there they are together. You will notice for this committee, most of our meetings would concentrate on legislation. This today is the only piece, help me, Rebecca, the only piece of Section 76 legislation. All the others are Section 75. So we don't need to have the same consultations and the provincial hearings on all the others except this one. Kupeka is already engaging with the provincial through the PLOs. You can see some of them here already. And they are looking at the public hearings in the provinces. I see that we have the... Okay, I'm not going to go through the details of the program. It's all there. As we said with the program, it's for our information and adoption. But I think it's just going to be important, honorable members, to say that we are looking at the final mandates on this gambling bill to be dealt with on the 20th of March. Right? So we can work from there back related to our public hearings. Okay, 20th of March. We work back from there. Next week, just in terms of the program, I've looked at it again. We are unfortunately not sitting. I know you're going to miss us. We're not sitting as committees, but we have SONA next week, Thursday, starting at 7. So in terms of my reading of the program, that's what's going to bring us to Cape Town next week. But we will be meeting on Tuesday, the 12th of April of February, and then again on Wednesday, the 13th of February. On the 13th of February, this committee will be dealing with the negotiating mandate on the National Credit Amendment Bill, and we will also deal with the Copyright Amendment Bill. Those are two pieces. So we'll be meeting for the whole day on the 13th. On the 12th, we will just be looking at the bill that was before us yesterday, the National Land Transport Amendment Bill. Let's leave it at that for now. Then I finally, honorable members, want to present to you the minutes of our meeting of the 28th of November, 2018. It was distributed to us before then. It was the day on which we dealt with the National Credit amendment bill in the committee. I'll just read the committee deliberations and resolution. The committee, that's item 3, the committee deliberated on the written submissions received and resolved on the following. No oral submissions will be held. And on 3.2, members of the committee should relay the deliberations on the submissions to their respective provincial legislatures to be considered during the negotiating mandates process that is currently underway. Rebecca, do we have the mandates from all the provinces already? Just say it so that the members can follow them.
So far we have received mandates from 3 provinces, negotiating mandates.
Okay, he'll email that to us so that we can assist in doing the follow-up. Because it's Section 75.
Yeah. But Chairperson, that we can just follow up with our own provinces.
Yeah.
Because our own provinces aren't neglecting this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't form a quorum. Honourable members, can I ask for anybody who feels comfortable to propose for the acceptance of that minute? I'm dealing with a proposal for the acceptance of the minute. Propose, Dikhale, seconded. Hi. Honourable Faber.
Chairperson, I hope I'm in the right, but I think Honourable Terblanche is spelled T-R Blanche, not Terre-Blanche. if you can just perhaps fix that, I will accept it as well.
He didn't give us his ID. Honourable Terblanche, spell for us, please.
T-E-R-B-L-A-N-C-H-E, and I want to put it on record, Chairperson, that I'm not related to that other individual. Thank you.
No, that wasn't the question. The question was, are you related to Mrs. Terblanche? we welcomed you in that meeting already, and we've resolved the thing there. Honourable members, I thank you very much. Can we thank the National Empowerment Fund for the calendars that they have given to us as well for 2019? I haven't had the 2019 calendar in my office until I received this. They were distributed earlier in the meeting. Thank you very much, honorable members. We are adjourned. I'm going to go to the next one.